Hey, everybody, it's Devin.
And Stella. And Kate.
Top of the morning. Welcome to Med Crimes. Is St. Patrick's Day.
Sure is.
I mean, not for you guys, but for us right now, it's St. Patrick's Day.
Yup.
You have a Devonism today.
Yeah, buddy. A Devonism. Two pata.
At least.
Two pata.
It could be three.
Oh!
It could be a series.
My aching heart.
She just, the hedge.
The hedge attacks again.
Kate described it as, what did you say when I told you I wanted to do this one? You said, my little girl is growing up.
Yes.
She had some podcast pride.
There were tears. It was a lot.
Aw.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. So cute. Before we get into it, as you can tell, we have a guest host today, for those that are watching on YouTube. Miss Stella has joined us.
Stella the frog.
And speaking of animals, for those that have been following along for Med Crimes for a while, I kind of had been talking about my family being on a hunt and a search for our little fur baby edition.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to say that we have one. And also, coincidentally, in honor of St. Patrick's Day, his name is Reuben. His name is Reuben, black lab terrier mix that we rescued.
You guys, his face. It's so smooshy and I love it so much.
He is a love.
He is a love.
We've had him for 4 or 5 days now.
Oh my gosh.
So the podcast family's getting larger.
He is the goodest boy.
Yes.
Yes.
I'll post a picture of him.
Yes, we will.
We'll post a picture because, you know, as the podcast family grows, we have to share.
We sure do.
We have to share.
And if anybody hears some little in the background, it's only because Stella is part Frenchie and she sure does have a little bit of a snort, especially when she sleeps, and she's gonna get ready to have a nice
nap. She's gonna get comfy, and we'll see how our fancy equipment does with the background thudding.
Yes, the boys
because
and the girl.
It's a family get together day.
It sure is. We love these days.
So between the addition of the four children and the new addition of Reuben being upstairs, it could get a little thuddy.
I removed the one dog from the chaos to hopefully help with that, but we'll see what happens.
We'll see how it goes.
Yep.
We have some Patreons.
We have Patreons.
Patreons.
We have Katrina Hepler, who's a rejoin. Welcome back, Katrina. We love you.
Welcome back, Katrina.
Woo! And we have...
Ambra Lloyd.
Ambra, your name.
That is beautiful.
Okay. Also, very fittingly, what you guys are today are leprechauns.
Dun, dun, dun!
Leprechauns.
Ta-da!
Ta-da! Really cute ones, though.
Not the nasty, mean ones.
No, like cute ones.
The ones that deliver the pot of gold and not steal it.
Are there leprechauns that deliver pots of gold? One of these leprechauns needs to do an audit and make sure I'm on the list.
Where's our rainbow?
Where's my rainbow and where's my gold?
I want to dive right into that.
So, Katrina and Ambra, if you guys could look into that with your leprechaun brethren, that would be great.
You need no explanation on what your historical character
no,
is.
No, I do not need to give you any information on that. Everybody knows what a leprechaun is.
Nope.
And you guys are it because you're awesome.
We're sporting our St. Patrick's Day stuff by our green wall here.
Yes, the safety hedge is green.
We are not wearing green because I feel like we would blend in.
Yes.
So there's that. I did think of that this morning.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. So we are going to get into a case that has been heavily requested.
Oh, my God. Ever since we started this, it's been, when are you guys going to do this? When are you guys going to do this? And you know what? Devin said to me.
Like a month ago, I randomly said, Kate,
I think
it's my turn. I think this is the first one for me for season three. And so I'm like, Kate, it is my turn.
Yes.
What do you think of this guy? And you kind of flipped out.
I kind of did because I was like, that is a big one. And I feel like that's right. I felt it in my bone, my Med Crimes bone that's like way down in there. I felt that it was tingly.
Deep in the soul. deep in the soul.
Yep.
So without further ado, we are going to talk about Dr. Harold Shipman.
Oh. I'm strapping in.
For those of you that know who he is, you're probably like, oh my God, finally!
Finally!
For others, you're probably like, who the hell is he? And guess what? We're going to tell you.
it's one of those cases that is just so monumentous and expansive that it's one of those things we wanted to do right, you know?
Yes.
Do it right. Do it one time, the first time, so that you don't have to repeat them like I'm probably going to have to do with all the first ones that I did.
Oh my God. Some of them would be fun to redo.
Yes.
Some of them would be fun to redo.
And Janine others, Jones, not so much.
Others like Tanzler, no, I don't need to hear that again. We got enough of that with
that can be our next one.
Last 2 weeks ago.
That can be our next one. I'll sign you up.
Funeral home.
You can do Tanzler 2.0. I'll let you do it.
No, I can't. I can't spend the time researching that and have it in my house.
I'm just
in
joking.
My soul. Nope. So, Dr. Harold Shipman is also known whom we've covered other types with this nickname, mm-hmm. but he is very notoriously known as Dr. Death.
That's right. He's like the OG Dr.
He's
Death.
He's the OG Dr. Death.
Right.
There's Dr. Death of Christopher Dunch.
Yes.
You know, for the United States, but. So we'll call him the United Kingdom Dr. Death.
Mm-hmm.
He's the OG UK Dr. Death.
Yeah, buddy.
He's also known as the Angel of Death.
Mm-hmm.
And he is one of the most notorious serial killers of all time.
I am so ready for this. I'm so ready. I watched a documentary years ago on him, and it was just what he did and like the amount, like the scale.
Yes.
It's wild.
It's wild. It's wild.
I'm so ready.
So it's definitely a two-parter. We'll see about three potentially and what comes next. But so today we're going to kind of talk about his early life, his early career, kind of what built him to what he started to do.
Mm-hmm.
We'll touch a little bit on the cases, but not a ton.
Mm-hmm.
Part two will definitely be really juicy.
Mm-hmm.
So we gotta build up. We gotta build up and understand this guy a little bit.
All right. I'm down.
So
are you ready, Stella?
She's ready.
She is so ready.
She's ready.
Oh, man.
Harold Frederick Shipman, also known as Fred. Fred.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was born on January 14th of 1946 on the Bestwood Estate in Nottingham, UK.
Okay.
Essentially, it was like a public housing. So I forget the UK term that they called it, but it was essentially like, you know, our terms of public housing. His family was not very well off.
Mm-hmm.
They lived kind of a low income household. He was the second of three children,
okay.
Middle child. I also am the middle child,
okay.
But I'd like to think that we are not alike. Hopefully.
Unless you have something to tell me, I think you guys are vastly different.
He was named after his father, Harold Frederick Shipman. His father was a lorry driver. Do you know what a lorry driver is? I had to look this up.
So I've heard it a million times. Is the lorry the truck? Not the trolley.
It's a truck driver.
It's
essentially a
That's
truck
right.
driver.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry, UK listeners. We are trying.
Sorry.
There's so many of you. We love you.
We love the UK listeners.
We do.
And if I
we
get
do.
Any of my UK references wrong,
please correct
oh
us.
Oh my gosh. Because again,
we need help.
I do not pretend to know everything.
Okay. Me neither.
His mother, Vera Shipman. I love that name.
Me too.
She was a homemaker.
Okay, Vera.
Again, his parents were low working class,
mm-hmm.
But they were devout Methodists. So
okay.
He grew up in a very, you know,
like a devout
good, stable
household.
Home. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's kind of rumored that he might have been the favorite. I mean, I'd like to say that I'm my parents' favorite child, but
and you're
you
the
know,
middle,
then they'd
so...
be like, I don't have any favorites. So
you
knows?
Would never admit
but
that.
He was very close to his mother. So despite whether or not he was the favorite child or not, he was very close to his mom.
Okay.
Vera and Fred, two peas in a pod. She really kind of instilled in him a sense of superiority. And I don't know if because she like devoted so much to him or anything, whether or not, you know, who knows what kind of brought him to kind of have this arrogance about him.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just kind of like, yeah, no, I'm good.
So he kind of like grew up
yeah.
thinking like,
yeah.
I am the man actually.
But because like, as he grew up with that like superiority complex or like an arrogance to him, as he kind of grew up, it was like it tainted future relationships that, I mean, how many of us like that? I'm holier than thou or I'm better than you are. We don't really like people like that.
It gives me the ick.
I mean, you need to be humble.
Yes.
But so this really kind of made him isolated when he was an adolescent and didn't have a lot of friends.
So he just drove everyone away with his attitude.
Yeah. Somewhat around like a group of friends, he was kind of reserved about it
mm-hmm.
when he was not on the athletic field.
Okay.
But so like when he was in a classroom and whatnot, he was like quiet and reserved. His arrogance really came out playing rugby.
Got
like
it.
That was his thing. And he's just like, So playing rugby and being a long distance runner. Those were his areas where he was like, I'm pretty badass.
Okay.
I'm going to crush you, you know. And I mean, that's where it kind of came out.
Rugby? That game. Have you seen like videos?
That's pretty rough.
Oh, yeah.
And am I wrong when I say, wow, that it's a, like, it's similar to football, but like no padding.
But like a lot like more violent.
Yes. Yes. And like you guys like, I hope you're at least wearing jock straps at minimum. I mean, so
protect the junk, if nothing else.
That was kind of the synopsis of like his childhood and his adolescence. When he was 17, his mother was diagnosed with terminal lung cancer.
Oh, that's sad.
So again, they were super very close. Mm-hmm. He started to kind of help. He didn't really oversee her care, but he was really involved.
Got it.
Like, obviously, he was 17. He can't oversee her care. Sure. Her care, but not. When the physicians and those that were helping her with her terminal disease, he was right there.
Got it.
And helping to be her caretaker at home.
Okay.
This kind of started to like... Is this where the spark of where his medical career came from?
Maybe, you know, like inspired him.
He was pretty fascinated. So it's terminal lung cancer. Over time, she started to decline.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pretty fascinated by how the morphine had such a positive effect on her suffering.
Wow.
It was just like, wow, this drug is like a magic drug. My mom could be suffering to breathe or in so much pain, and then she's okay. She's calm. She's, you know, so like this just kind of started to like spark his interest about the drug.
With morphine in particular.
Yes.
Okay.
She did succumb to her disease in 1963 and she was only 43.
Oh, Jesus.
That's very young.
That is so sad. Young.
Again, he was 17.
And with three kids
She was 43.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
God.
Isn't that awful?
Terrible. Yeah.
Such a young age. I know it was, you know, it's the 60s, but.
Still very sad.
Yeah. So it's interesting, you know, they kind of started to say that his mother's death kind of like what connects him to his MO when he gets to his killings later on in the career.
Right.
Is this really kind of like what sparked it? Because again, the morphine was administered at home by a doctor. He watched her pain subside and just kind of really started to learn about the drug.
Okay.
And so like if they're trying to, as people... years down the road, right? After he's, you know, gone through all this stuff and they find out who the monster that he is and they start to learn about him. And, you know, people always try to pinpoint like a psychological, where did it start? This is kind of a turning point. But again, he's still like, again, he's only 17, end of high school. His friends kind of, though he was odd and arrogant and just kind of like, his friends said that they were talking one weekend and they were just like, hey, Fred, what'd you do this weekend? You know, I had whatever. How was your weekend? Oh, my mother died. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's gone.
Why are you here?
And then he takes off for a run. You know, it's just like bizarre how close they were. And then to just say to the few groups of friends that you have, she's gone. Yeah, no.
My mom died. I understand that it wasn't unexpected.
Of course.
You know, but still, he's a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very close. Yes. So it seems very...
So it kind of, you know, some people obviously react to death differently.
Of course.
You know, judge. So it's like... Maybe he was trying to just be...
To not
internalize it
that?
A little bit, you know, if he was that devastated, everyone handles it in their own way. But it was definitely odd.
Wow.
So he was obviously devastated by her death.
Mm-hmm.
But this made him determined to go to medical school.
Okay.
You know, which, of course, maybe, you know, that happens to a lot of people. I want to cure cancer.
Yes.
I want to, you know, so. Sure. So he was admitted to Leeds University Medical School for training.
Mm-hmm.
This was 2 years later. He was about 19. It is important to note that he did fail his entrance exams the first time.
But, not unusual, though.
Not unusual, because I'm sure it's very hard.
Oh, yeah.
I had to take, like, what is it, the MCATs or the LSATs or something? Yeah, forget it. No way.
The MCATs, I wouldn't do well either.
But he did go for training, and then he... also had his hospital internship.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's 1966 on November 5th when he marries Primrose May Oxtoby.
Primrose Zebedeen.
No.
Oh.
He was 19. She was 17. By the time they got married, she was already pregnant with their first child. It was definitely like, you know, it's the 60s. Sure. So they met. They didn't know each other for very long.
She got pregnant.
Doing the right thing. She got pregnant. It's like, okay, we have to hurry up and get married.
What was the right thing in the 60s?
In the 60s. Not in 2024. No. Important to note.
Also, so, 17, not necessarily the right thing.
Again, not in 2024.
We digress. Yeah.
This is almost 60 years ago.
This is true.
Ouch, that hurts to say.
I know.
Anyway, so she was pregnant with their first child. They ended up having four children together. Throughout this time during his medical school, I think by the time he ended, they had two children. Mm-hmm. So the children were coming pretty close together. He graduated from the Leeds School of Medicine in 1970. Mm-hmm. So at this point, it's looking like his life's pretty normal. He's got a wife, two young kids, graduated medical school.
Look at him
He's
go.
He's moving on, right?
He's doing great.
Good for you, Freddie.
Yeah, buddy.
Good for you.
Good for you, Freddie.
So when he graduated in 1970, he went on to work as a junior physician. Mm-hmm. And then he started to move up the ranks pretty quickly. So he became a general practitioner at a medical center in West Yorkshire. And this general practitionership was kind of like also like a partnership, similar to like a law firm, you know, they got partners.
Oh, sure.
Like, so he's, you know, he's one of the leading providers in this medical center.
Okay.
It was here in the medical center in West Yorkshire between 1974 to 1976, where he first initially found himself in trouble with the law.
Uh-oh.
So kind of a pattern that we've done in some of these shows where they always have like somewhat of a warning sign. So he was a young doctor when he, so, you know, he's probably been practicing 4 to 5 years at this point, when he was first caught forging prescriptions for Demerol.
Ooh, wait, forging prescriptions?
He was forging prescriptions. Essentially, he was overprescribing for his patients.
Got it.
And then taking the reserve.
Okay.
So he was, he's obviously, he obviously can prescribe.
Yes.
But he was over.
He was prescribing for people that didn't really need it.
Yep.
Okay.
So Demerol is an opioid, similar to the category of morphine, typically used to treat severe pain, but he was doing this for his own use.
Oh.
At this point in time, it wasn't for other people.
He was abusing.
Okay. He did become addicted.
Oh.
And his addiction ended up becoming so severe over time that he essentially had to have his wife drive him to visit his patients.
Wow.
At this point in time in the 60s, there's a lot of house calls.
Okay.
There's a lot of like, it's not just here's your appointment at 2:20.
Sure.
You know, like,
yeah, it was,
you
like,
know, it was very laid back.
And, yes.
But he would go and his wife would bring him because he couldn't drive.
Got it.
This might have been the first time. It's, you know, again, at this point in time, they don't know for sure, but they think that this might have been around the time that his first killings started to happen.
Okay.
So we'll get into the numbers a little bit later on, but they don't have an overall grasp of each and every case of someone that he's killed.
Of course not.
They have a generic number.
Right.
And they believe that this is around the first time that it might have started to happen.
Wow.
So he was caught forging the prescriptions for large amounts of the drugs, and he was forced to leave the practice when he was caught by his colleagues.
Oh, his colleagues caught him. Uh-oh. Okay.
So all the other Putney doctors were like, no. So he was fined, fired from his job, and required to attend a rehabilitation clinic in York.
Okay.
But he was able to keep his medical license.
Okay.
So, which, I mean,
first offense
happens nowadays.
And yeah, exactly. If someone is, if, you know, there are programs specifically designed nowadays for medical professionals, physicians included, who have addiction issues. And
exactly.
Yes, absolutely.
So he did seem to get back on his feet pretty quickly when he returned to work. So after he had gone to his rehabilitation center, he went to Donnybrook Medical Center in Hyde in 1977. He spent about 15 years here.
Oh.
So he did 15 years, and then around 1993 is when he went up to set, when he went to set up his own individual medical practice.
Okay, so he had his own practice. Okay.
So he went on to develop a reputation among his patients and in the community as a good and helpful physician.
Okay.
He was renowned for his bedside manner, ingratiated himself as a hardworking doctor who enjoyed the trust of patients and colleagues alike, although he had a reputation for arrogance among the junior staff.
Okay.
So that kind of kept along with him.
Yep.
So when he had his one-man practice, it was at 21 Market Street, it was called his surgery. He had 5 years here before the time he was finally caught.
Oh.
So during the 5 years, he had approximately 3,000 patients that were solely his.
Wow.
That he was the general provider for.
Okay.
And his reputation for being the good doctor was growing.
Okay.
Like, so again, from the outside of his small stint with a drug addiction, he's looking like his life is pretty normal.
Sure.
At this point, he has 4 children.
Yes.
He's got his lovely wife. He's a physician, growing popularity in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Had a little bit of an addiction, but then...
It seems like things have sort of resolved themselves after he went to the program.
And, yeah.
Okay.
But again, you know, so he opened that in 93.
Right.
He is essentially eventually was caught in 1998.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's like, what happened in this time?
Right. Yes, exactly.
This is what took, you know, not a lot of certainty during those years until he was finally caught.
Right.
Then they all started coming out like, oh, my God. Okay. Oh, my God. This happened. So,
oh boy.
Which we're going to start to get into. Occasionally, he had some scrutiny, but never anything that was concrete.
Mm-hmm.
In 1985, a number of his colleagues were disturbed. This was before his private praxis. They were kind of disturbed to find that he had a number of deaths, a lot higher ratios than what they had.
Oh, okay.
So, and they just like, it was a suspiciously high rate.
Interesting.
A lot more
like
than
like his mortality and morbidity rate was high.
Right.
Hmm.
It was noted that an interesting fact that most of his patients, because again, they did a lot of home visits at that time.
Yeah.
Most of his patients were fully clothed or usually sitting upright in a recliner or in a chair. Never were any of his patients really found to be in a bed or like in a nightdress.
So like
they're receiving end of life care, right?
Oh, weird.
Yeah. So it's
like they're all just like just very
sitting in a chair in the living room.
Very conveniently.
Yeah.
Like almost staged type of situation.
So there was a small covert investigation that came with this when his colleagues had a suspicion, but he was cleared. It appeared that his records were in order. But little did they know at the time that he was really altering his paperwork to avoid detection, which we're going to get into later when we're looking at the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
But that's at this point, that's what he's doing is he's altering the medical records. We'll get to the detail. But so this was a very quick, quiet investigation.
Okay, something like more internal.
And nothing really came out of it.
Okay.
So that was, what did I say, 1985?
Yeah.
So 1998, the undertakers in his community, so the funeral home folks, become suspicious of the number of shipment patients who are dying.
And are they, when patients are being like removed after they die, are like... the funeral home staff are coming and removing these people, right? So are they noticing that everyone is just so very conveniently sitting upright with their hands folded
we'll
in the chairs?
There.
Okay, sorry.
We'll get there.
I'm doing
you're
a Devin.
Doing a, you're doing a Devin.
I'm doing a Devin.
You're doing a Devin. We'll get there.
Okay.
So the neighboring medical practice further discovered that the death rate, again, was 10 times higher than their own medical practice.
Okay, that
so
there?
At this point, he has his own practice. It's 1998.
Red flag.
He's been practicing for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Shipman's death rate is 10 times higher. When
Whoops.
He's certifying the death certificates.
He's doing it 10 times more often.
Yes.
That's a red flag.
They reported their concerns to the local coroner, and then the Greater Manchester Police were called. This could have been the end of his terror, but it wasn't.
Okay.
Again, the police investigation failed to carry out basic checks during this time.
Oh.
They didn't even look into whether he had a criminal record, because if they did, they would have found that he had had forging prescriptions.
So
in the
they
past.
didn't even look into that.
No. Nope.
Come on.
So two investigations at this point in time Nothing.
Wow.
And again, during this time, they're looking into the victim's records. The death certificates are certified as old age.
Sure.
Most of his victims
like
were
natural
older.
Deaths. Yeah.
He had a few that were younger. But again, nothing. There was false illnesses on the medical record, and nothing outside of the rate was looking even more suspicious.
Got it.
Because he'd already been cleared once before.
Right.
Suspicion is still growing.
Mm-hmm.
People are talking. A local taxi driver. This guy broke my heart.
Do we love this guy?
Yes.
Okay.
John Shaw is a local taxi driver who had suspected Harold Shipman was killing his elderly patients.
Oh, really?
But he didn't do anything about it for 3.5 years.
Oh,
again, no. He's a taxi driver. So he's like, who am I? You know,
right,
like,
sure.
This is a community physician with a renowned reputation.
Like, no,
and this
was
just thoughts that he had,
right,
you know?
Exactly. So he's like, I'm just surmising here, and I also don't want to like ruin mm-hmm. this guy's reputation.
He didn't initially report him to the police because he thought nobody would believe crazy and fantastic fears.
Aww.
He was just like, you know, he later felt guilty because he feels the guilt that at least 20 people died because he had no one to turn to or speak to.
Oh,
he feels
no.
personally responsible for 20 people.
Ooh.
Because he worked as a taxi driver for 10 years between 1988 and 1998. And he drove a number of these patients to Shipman's office, especially his private office, for appointments.
Oh, no.
So this is where he's like feeling like, I drove them there and they didn't come out.
Wow. So they're driving to his office and just never leaving.
You'll hear. Yep.
Oh, my God. What?
So okay. he's saying that these patients, they became his friends. You know, because some of them he would drive several times, right? It's not like they went into the office once and never came out.
You build a relationship with these people.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, and Shipman was building a relationship with them too. They'd be seen several times.
Yes, yes.
And then one time he would just decide.
Wow.
But he started to say that certain relatives of those patients would ring him and say, don't go and pick up my mom. She's dead.
Wow.
And then he's just like, I got a strange way of thinking, who was their doctor? Like, families would just start calling. He was scheduled to pick up so-and-so tomorrow. Well, don't. She's dead.
What is happening, in his clinic?
Yep.
What?
Just
people walking in his clinic and dying? I feel like that's enough of a red flag.
I mean, we've had several so far.
Yes, many.
So
way too many.
Mr. Shaw said that he first became concerned. So in March of 1995, the death of Netta Ashcroft, he said he began to see a pattern emerging. After another patient, Millicent Garside, died in October of 96. So Mr. Shaw, he was first concerned in 95 about after Netta. And then in October of 96, he's like, I'm starting to see a pattern. He was told that that Shipman had given her mother an injection.
Oh.
And he's like, my God, he's like, I so bad wanted to say he's murdered your mom.
Oh, God.
He's like, but again, he's like, I felt like I wouldn't be believed. John's wife Kathleen was like, you need to keep quiet in case you're wrong. We don't want to get sued. This is a local physician.
Yeah.
Good reputation.
Yeah.
You know, not to say that taxi drivers are bad, but like at the time they felt like low man on the totem pole.
Oh, that's so sad for him.
And so they felt like they couldn't speak up.
Which is so sad.
He stated he did consider getting in touch with the general medical council. But he was off put because, again, there had been a lot of scandals in the medical profession.
Okay.
And so he wasn't confident that they would investigate Shipman. And he was really worried about being like the boy who cried wolf.
Got it.
And essentially, like I said, just wrapping up, the fact that Shipman was such a well-respected figure in the community who seemed to be popular and well-liked by his patients made it more difficult to express my concerns publicly.
Sure does, yes.
I couldn't believe what my suspicions were. They were so crazy that I couldn't even grasp what my mind was telling me. Like, he doubted himself.
Aww.
So it's said at this point, like, throughout his career, you know, so we've had a couple of different, small investigations brought up, right? So they've had the two different ones. He's been arrested for forging prescriptions. Now the taxi driver, as once he's been found out, he's like, man, for 3.5 years, I wondered, right?
Yes.
Throughout his career, it's said that he's responsible for over 250 deaths of his patients.
250?
Over 150 of them were specifically investigated, which we're going to get into a lot of them in part two. We can't talk about 150.
Wow. Right.
But over 150 of the deaths were investigated. And no one knows exactly how far the extent of everything went.
Exactly.
Because it's so hard.
It's impossible.
But at one point, again, to talk about like the pattern and different things that were being seen, he had 8 deaths in 1 month, approximately 6 patients on one street.
What?
Again, for the taxi driver to be like, oh my God, okay, she's dead.
God.
She's dead. Like they, 6 of the patients were all on one street.
Oh, Jesus. That's insane.
And 5 patients were killed in his own office.
Wow.
So again, where they were brought and then didn't come out. So some of the families that we're going to get into in part two, they're talking about how odd behavior. Like, so one of the patients, the mother would always like greet people at the door.
Mm-hmm.
She always particularly sat in one chair so that she could look out the window and be like, oh, hi. Like, you know, so as soon as she could see someone walking up, mm-hmm. she'll go to the door, and she had the door open before you got
Aww.
There. She would always see people to the door.
Right.
She was always just that person that was just like, you're at my house. I'm going to welcome you.
I'm going to walk you in. Yeah.
One day a neighbor recalls seeing that she doesn't bring Shipman to the door when he's leaving. He's doing a home visit, but she doesn't bring him to the door.
Okay.
And then they kind of noticed when they found her that it was odd because she was seated at the couch that was up against the window, and she always faced the window so that she could see. Like, she never sat in that spot.
So why
That's
would
where
she
guests
sit?
Would sit?
Yeah, so why
would
she?
So these are the suspicions that certain people would have as to...
How
this
did she
really
end up in
suspicious.
That spot?
Exactly.
Wow.
So that's the type of stuff that we're going to get into in part two.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
How
so
sad.
Right now we're just kind of setting the scene and looking at it, and we're going to get into the gruesome stuff.
Wow.
In part two. How he was caught brings his arrogance to a whole nother level.
That is so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So
he's
kind of a douchebag.
Kind of.
A little bit.
100%.
Yeah.
Certifiable douchebag.
Yeah.
What did you think, Stella? She's like, yes.
She doesn't care. Stella's done. Thank you for listening to our short but sweet intro into Dr. Harold Shipman.
I cannot wait to get into the other stuff.
Part two is going to be pretty detailed.
Woo!
Part two is going to be pretty detailed.
I'm so
I kind of just wanted to set the stage a little bit.
Yeah. That's a good place to... It's a good transition point.
Yeah, because once we get into, again, they really don't know these things until they fully investigate.
Sure.
And it's pretty graphic.
Oh my God. I'm so sad for those families, you know?
It gets pretty bad.
Really?
It gets pretty bad for the families.
Oh God, that's so sad.
Yeah, so we'll talk about it. You can definitely think that his arrogance got the best of him.
Wow.
Towards the end, so.
What a jerk face.
Thank you for listening, everyone.
Yes.
If you want to keep following us, you can follow us on Med Crimes Podcast on, Facebook. Let's start there.
And you can search us on YouTube, Med Crimes Podcast.
You can follow us on Instagram by searching Med Crimes Podcast.
If you wish to become a Patreon, you can join us at www.patreon.com/MedCrimesPodcast. Free t-shirts.
Woohoo! You want to send us any of your crazy stories, ideas, anything that you want to say, you can email us at medcrimes@gmail.com.
Oh, God, we love you.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Stay safe out there.
Bye-bye.